your kids could get free or low-cost health coverage from Medicaid or CHIP. Even if you've applied before, they may be eligible now. Kids up to age 19 are covered for checkups, vaccines, dentist visits, hospital care, and more. And if they already have Medicaid or CHIP, remember to renew every year. Visit insurekidsnow.gov or call 877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Welcome to Bollywood is for Lovers. I'm Erin Fraser.
And I'm Matt Bowes. In this supplemental episode, we're traveling to Japan with an all-female stage musical adaptation of Farah Khan's 2007 hit, Om Shanti Om.
Before we begin, we would like to respectfully acknowledge that we record this podcast on Treaty 6 territory, home to First Nations and Métis people. Matt, this might be our most esoteric episode ever. This is definitely one of the stranger things. It's one of the stranger episodes we have done.
It's definitely hitting a lot of our interests at the same time.
Yes. So, as we've talked about on the show before, last year we went to Japan. And one of the things that we really wanted to track down was a DVD copy of the Takarazuka Reviews performance of Om Shanti Om. Now, we've known about this since 2017 when it debuted, because Farah Khan traveled to Japan to attend the musical. Mm-hmm. And we've been curious ever since. And because we were in Japan and the Takarazuka has a huge fan base, and pretty much all the modern performances are available on DVD or Blu-ray in some form or another. Mm-hmm. We thought, let's find a copy. We made it kind of one of our missions while we were there.
Yeah, do you want to talk about where we bought it?
Sure, you can. We went to Nakano Broadway.
And we went to Nakano Broadway, which is amazing. I probably could have spent a week there because we like older anime.
Yes, I would say a lot of our interest in Japanese pop culture,
because we are old,
is on the older side of things.
You're wearing a Godzilla shirt right now.
This is a Destroy All Monsters shirt.
Even older.
Well, no, not older than Godzilla, but yeah. It's
an old film.
It's an older film. Yeah, we love old kaiju films. You love Lone Wolf and Cub. Mm-hmm. Zatoichi. We love Yakuza films from like the 60s. And so a lot of the pop culture that excites us the most isn't necessarily new. Mm-hmm. Especially in the anime space, and especially in the anime space of kind of things that we're interested in buying and collecting. We do watch a lot of modern anime, but we're not really interested in like merch for modern anime, whereas I found like a vinyl of Lupin the Third opening titles in Nakano Broadway, and that was
exciting.
There's
going to be a lot of notes on this one just to explain all this stuff.
Okay.
But we in Japan, October to November last year, mm-hmm. we did go to lots of stores, and I did find that going to Book Off or the regular sort of bookstore, mm-hmm. I didn't know a lot of the stuff. And it's also because some of it hasn't been translated yet,
yeah.
and the tastes there are different. And Like, realistically, a lot of the stuff I like is old man stuff. I like Gundam, which is in its 45th anniversary.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, it's not the most popular stuff. And what Nakano Broadway was, I'm going to say it's a shopping mall with a kind of, like, farmer's market as well. Like, the main floor there was, like, food stalls, yeah, and you could pick up fish and stuff like that. But if you go into the upstairs, it's kind of like a mall where there was small stores devoted to very specific things.
Yeah, and so there was an entire store devoted to Takarazuka. And this was like used Takarazuka. So like secondhand.
Most of the stuff was all used. Yeah,
yeah, it
was
secondhand.
It's like kind of like a flea market if you go, if you go to those.
Yeah, so you can also go to official Takarazuka stores.
Mm-hmm. In Osaka, presumably?
I believe there's one in Takarazuka, the town itself, and in Tokyo. But we decided to seek out the Takarazuka kind of secondhand market or shop, I guess you'd say, kind of like the specific Mandarake like stall for secondhand Takarazuka DVDs.
And Mandarake is the name
in Nakano Broadway.
Mandarake is the name of, like, I hesitate to call it a chain. It seems like one big store, but it's got all these little sub-stores that focus on various things.
Yeah.
So, like, to go into more detail, like, one store would be all cosplay items for, like, magical girl shows. Or it's creepy dolls. One place would be all that.
Or all kaiju.
All kaiju.
Or all art books.
Wrestling. Or, like, 60s, I think they're called Sofubi. The kind of weird plastic monsters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so
Ultraman.
Yeah, and this one, I don't know if it was all Takarazuka in there. There was kind of,
yeah,
I think it was more like live performance store.
And idol stuff.
And idols. So it was like lots of CDs, still very popular in Japan, vinyl. Signed headshots, VCDs, which you still get.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of DVDs and a few Blu-rays for Takarazuka. But one of the difficulties is we don't speak Japanese, and there's only so much you could do with Google Translate.
Yes.
So we did have to get the help of an employee, and she was really good.
Yeah, and they found it for us very quickly and seemed really happy that we were excited. Now, we should say, you know, we're talking a bit about kind of our interest in a lot of Japanese pop culture tends to be on the older side. Takarazuka is still very popular in Japan.
But it is old,
yes. So I guess before we explain what Takarazuka is.
And I know there's kind of a crossover with the Bollywood, I'm going to say the Western Bollywood community. There appears to
Makes
be a lot.
Sense.
There's a lot of people who like K dramas.
Yeah, it's a lot of melodrama.
Yeah, and I think people who like K dramas are interested in other Asian popular media, and then you get into this. So there is. I've seen like people I used to follow on Bollywood Twitter would kind of talk about Takarazuka sometimes, talk about K dramas.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just kind of a general interest in Asian popular culture that isn't translated and sent to the West.
Yeah, I can see
the
how
Thunderbolt Fantasy is also in there too, because it's like puppets.
Mm. I can see how fans of Bollywood would be interested in Takarazuka.
Mm-hmm. Because you're already, like, we'll get
it's
into
already this. Heightened emotions and melodrama and musical
and
numbers. And,
like, I don't speak Hindi anyway, so
it's
not that much of a difference to not speak Hindi and also not speak Japanese. So I'm not understanding the words that are being sung anyway.
Yeah.
So it's not a huge leap to just, like, enjoy a theatrical performance of something.
Yeah.
When I already don't know the words.
Yeah. So, Matt, I'm going to guess here, and I think I have had slightly more experience with Japanese theater than you have.
Probably. How much experience do you have?
Well, I have seen, I am, speaking of being interested in kind of older Japanese pop culture, I'm a big Sailor Moon fan.
Mm.
So I have seen some of the Sailor Moon stage musicals. I've never attended in person. I would like to see a performance live one day, but I've seen a lot of kind of taped performances of it, including in a movie theater, which was a lot of fun. I would say Takarazuka is somewhat similar to the Sailor Moon stage musicals, although up until up until recently, they still had male performers in the Sailor Moon stage musicals, but lately it's an all-female cast.
And Takara Zuka has always been all-female.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. And it's also like an anime/manga adaptation, and, you know, has like musical numbers and all of the drama. I've also watched the kind of like in Broadway, they call them pro shots, these kind of filmed versions of the stage musicals. And I've also watched the pro shot of the Spirited Away musical, which I would say is not as similar to Takara Zuka based on my limited experience as the Sailor Moon musicals are.
Well, that performed in London, didn't it?
Yes, yes. Yeah. The version I saw was one that was performed in Japan. And they're now doing the Totoro, My Neighbor Totoro stage adaptation, which is in London as well.
That might come here someday.
Maybe. I would love to see Spirited Away or My Neighbor Totoro and Sailor Moon. And I'd also love to see a Takara Zuka performance live. So
now, why didn't we go see one when we were there? I think they were...
It didn't line up.
Yeah, they
the
were
dates
between...
Didn't line up.
They
we
were
looked.
Between... Yeah.
Yeah. We looked. There was a really interesting kind of Western...
It was like an original sci-fi Western that sounded kind of cool.
That looked really interesting, yeah. So...
Now you can pinpoint exactly where we were there, because something I've learned about this art form is that it is very well Wikipedia'd.
Very well, yes.
People take a lot of care in, you know, keeping track of this.
Yeah. So a bit of background on the Takara Zuka review. Now, this we've been aware of Takara Zuka review for a long time, but this is truly our first experience. We've never watched a show before. We've seen clips before, especially because they do a lot of anime adaptations, but we've never sat down and fully watched a performance. It started in Takara Zuka in 1913.
Which is a place.
Yes, it is a place in the Kansai region of Japan, which is not far from Osaka. So we saw a lot of ads in Osaka.
We did, yeah. In the Osaka train stations.
Yeah. It was started by the president of Hankou Railways. He was quite an entrepreneur and started a bunch of things.
We went to the Hankou store.
Yeah.
Because it's a really big department store.
Hanshin. That was Hanshin.
We went to Hanshin and Hankou.
Yes.
There was two different ones.
Yes.
One of them was way more expensive, and I don't remember which one it was. Hanshin is the baseball team, you're right.
Yes.
Hankou, I think, was the way fancier store.
And Hankou was the first department store in a railway station, from what I understand. Mm-hmm. I'm not aware of, like, all the things that this guy did, but
Osaka was all department stores.
Yes.
I remember that. There was huge department stores, and a lot of the things we wanted to do were sort of, like, attached to them.
Yes. And one of the things he tried to do before Takara Zuka review was kind of like this onsen facility. Mm. So kind of, you know, like the Japanese hot spring style of bathing.
Yeah.
And it failed. He started this complex called Paradise, and it failed because at the time, kind of mixed gendered bathing was not allowed.
Mm.
And so it was converted into a theater. And the Takara Zuka's first performance was April 1st, 1914 at the Paradise Theater, which they converted from the indoor pool. He gave the group a motto of modesty, fairness, grace. And it was the goal to provide popular theatrical entertainment that the whole family can enjoy together. I've seen different translations of these things. Those are the translations provided on the Takara Zuka review site.
That sounds kind of like those awards in Hindi cinema that's like...
the wholesome film for popular entertainment.
Yeah, so yeah. kind of jibes with that.
Yeah, but you know, it's very much a business venture, you know. Create these Western style stage musicals that are going to entertain everyone.
Yeah, it's sort of like a Broadway show.
It definitely has its own fan base.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's been
but
around.
The setup is kind of like a Broadway show.
Yeah, it's been around for over 110 years, so it has its own, you know, conventions and motifs, and you know, as any art form that's been, you know, going for over 100 years, it has really kind of carved out its own space.
But if you, like us, have not seen one of these, imagine a Broadway show where all of the actors are women.
Yes, yes. So all performers...
And they sing and dance live on stage.
Yeah. All performers are women. They're known as the Takarisians.
Takarisians, yeah.
because they like Paris a lot. Takarazuka sure. Review really likes Paris.
It seemed like, yeah, they had a lot of, like, French Revolution, yes. Rose of Versailles.
We will get to that. Yeah. Yeah.
And even in the Om Shanti Om one, there was quite a bit of kind of French Revolution-y styling in the last kind of revenge song.
Yeah,
and,
well...
like, masquerade type stuff.
Yeah, you can kind of see some Phantom of the Opera influences there for sure.
Which I thought was in the original movie.
Yes, exactly.
And
goes back
goes
to...
Goes back to the reason why the movie started, which...
Yes, yeah, we'll
go through the long history.
Actresses who specialize in male roles are called otakoyaku, and actresses who specialize in female roles are called musumeyaku. As always, I apologize for all my pronunciations. These are our best guesses. The idea...
We were only there 3 weeks. We couldn't pick up the language.
The idea around the all-female cast is based on the original form of kabuki. So when kabuki first started in the early 1600s, it was all women. But then women were banned from performing kabuki in 1629. Partly because a lot of the women involved in kabuki were also prostitutes and, you know, they wanted to discourage these kinds of things.
I mean, that's relatively close to Shakespeare's time and it was the same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And they also said the prostitute thing.
Yeah, so for like, we are not experts on the history of kabuki, but, you know, kind of started with women, then they decided to kick women out and it became all men and it's been all men,
just like every film industry, too.
For a really long time. I do not know if women perform kabuki nowadays. But I do know that that is the origin and maybe one of the inspirations for Takarazuka Review being all female. Because, again, I don't see this reference to kabuki on their website, but I see it referenced elsewhere. Men are involved in the writing, directing, choreography, as musicians,
and
other aspects of the review, just not, they're not the performers. There are currently 5 troops, Flower, Moon, Snow, Star, and Cosmos, as well as a troupe called Senka for experienced members.
I believe this was a Star production we watched.
The Wikipedia definitely said, and I don't know if I wrote it down. I don't know if I wrote it down, but the different troupes have different fans. They have, you know, different performers, different styles. That's a whole thing that we have not gotten into because, we are just dipping our toes in at this point.
Yeah.
There are around 80 actresses today. Members train for 2 years at the Takarazuka Music School, and there's a whole culture around, you know, when you are a, like what they would call in K-pop as a trainee, and then you debut, and then which troupe you get put in, like that's a whole thing and a whole part of the fandom. Mm-hmm. They are known for their melodramatic storylines and lavish costumes and sets. They perform original new musicals as well as adaptations of other musicals, popular literature, movies, manga, etc. They've even performed musicals about themselves.
I saw they did Guys and Dolls as well, so they also do some Broadway adaptations.
Yeah, then Gone with the Wind. Like, one of their most popular shows is The Rose of Versailles, based on the 1970s manga by Ryoko Akeda. And they've done a number of kind of spin-offs of The Rose of Versailles as well. For those not familiar with The Rose of Versailles, it's a very important manga in the development of shoujo girls manga, as well as kind of the rococo style that is popular in Japan and leads to the Lolita fashion.
And there's a new film adaptation coming out like the end of this month.
Yeah, yeah. It was already released in Japan, but it'll be out on Netflix soon. I'm really looking forward to seeing
it. I don't know if I'd watch the whole show, but I'll watch a movie.
Yeah.
I'll watch any movie.
It's so The Rose of Versailles, it's set during the French Revolution and it's about Marie Antoinette and her relationship with Oscar, who is like a, I don't know, knight or something, who's a woman dressed as a man. Yeah. So it's very popular, very influential. in Japanese pop culture. And
you mentioned Princess Knight later, which is very similar.
Yes, and they've done a lot of adaptations, Takarazuka. Or they've done like an adaptation of the main story and then like adaptations of other minor characters and things.
Yeah.
I also wanted to mention that in 2024, they adapted RRR to the stage. Unfortunately, we were there kind of after those performances had ended. But like,
we couldn't find the DVD of it, but maybe next time.
It is amazing to me that, you know, you take a show that is so masculine and you have entirely women perform it. I'd be really interested to see that.
And like a lot of gunplay, a lot of fight scenes, yeah. Which Om Shanti Om doesn't really have a lot of. So it would be a very different sort of performance.
Om Shanti Om seems more applicable or just kind of more natural for a stage adaptation to me than something like RRR. So, you know, I mean, if people like this episode, maybe we'll do the RRR one. Mm-hmm. So they perform year-round at the Takarazuka Grand Theater in Hyogo and the Tokyo Takarazuka Theater, which is obviously in Tokyo. They also play throughout Japan and have live broadcasts and streaming in cinemas. And there's a dedicated TV channel that is available at some partner hotels. I don't think we found that channel at our hotels.
Oh, you wouldn't really let me look too hard at TV either. You don't like having the TV on in hotels, so I was...
No.
Well, most of the time we watched MTV Japan, which was way better than MTV ever was here in Canada.
Yeah. Women make up the primary audience. It's about 90%.
That's just not surprising.
The fans are women.
Yeah.
And just with regards to, like, Takarazuka continues to be very popular in Japan. Shows generally are at about 95% capacity.
People were clapping very politely.
Yes.
During what's supposed to be a pretty raucous showing of Om Shanti Om.
That's how Japanese audiences react. I know when like Taylor Swift was in Japan, people were complaining that all the Japanese audiences just like sit down in their chairs and clap politely. From what I understand, that is generally how Japanese audiences...
Kind of how they do everything.
Yeah. They enjoy the show, but they don't, like, they don't... You wouldn't expect that kind of experience that they talk about in movie theaters in India.
Yeah, they're not getting
up
and dancing.
Dance and hoot and holler. It's a much more reserved. But yes, in terms of the legacy, it had an impact on Osamu Tezuka, who grew up in Takarazuka. And Princess Knight was inspired by Takarazuka.
So which I have over there.
Princess Knight is the first manga that was directed at a female audience. And it's about a girl...
The princess who dresses as a knight.
Yes, a girl who has both masculine and feminine sides.
Yeah.
And Princess Knight is also like... very influential and important for the development of manga.
You don't hear a lot of things that influenced Tezuka.
Yeah.
You hear Tezuka influenced everything.
Yeah.
But he grew up in... You can put a link to him, but he's considered the Walt Disney of Japan.
And he grew up in Takarazuka.
That's cool.
So he knew some of the performers growing up, and that's what influenced...
And that's how old it is, too.
They've also done adaptations of Tezuka. So they've done Phoenix...
Astro Boy?
I think Blackjack was
another
one.
Blackjack makes sense, yeah.
Yeah.
Astro Boy maybe not so much.
I don't think they did Astro Boy.
But like...
Yeah.
It's like hearing, oh yeah, this influenced Walt Disney or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, it's so old and influential that it influenced the most influential guy of all time. The god of manga.
Yeah.
Is what he's called.
Yeah, yes, very much like you said, like the Walt Disney of Japan. I think a lot of people would assume that's Miyazaki, but Tezuka's more accurate.
I think even Miyazaki would agree with that.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, it's obviously influenced Sailor Moon. I believe the characters of Mishiru and... Oh, I forgot her Japanese name. And Haruka. Mishiru and Haruka, Neptune and Uranus are kind of somewhat based on Takarazuka.
The more boyish ones?
Yes, yes, they are the lesbians. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you can see how an all-female musical troupe that, you know, that has a lot of stories that focus on romance could be interpreted as
maybe a little gay,
homoerotic. There was a controversy at one point about two of the actresses in Takarazuka having a relationship, but I also don't want to impose kind of like a Western, like a lot of the kind of what I saw online about the appeal of Takarazuka primarily to women was written by Western scholars.
Yeah.
And so I don't want to impose kind of a Western idea of homoeroticism on the Takarazuka.
Yeah.
You know, it's... like, I think, I don't think, I think probably everyone can enjoy it, regardless of gender, regardless of sexual orientation.
If you like stage musicals, which admittedly is not everybody.
And but there's also an argument to be made that women, that it appeals to women, not because of the homoerotic undertones between, like, you know, women's love, but because of the way it subverts gender roles by having women play men. So I think, you know, like, there is likely a lot of reasons why people enjoy this kind of musical theater, but also it's just fun. It's really fun. So I guess, like, what was your, this is the only one we've ever seen, so we can't talk too much about our impressions outside of this show. We will say we had no subtitles. We watched this entirely in Japanese, only being able to understand the occasional arigato gozaimasu, or kind of, you know, words that we're familiar with, or when they were singing some of the songs, some of the lyrics from the Hindi songs. But kind of like, I would love to go see a performance live in person. If we happen to be in Japan in the future and there's a show on, I would go. I really don't think it matters for me if I speak the language.
We're very used to seeing things where we don't speak the language.
Yeah.
And especially there like there a performance. Titles, but like you can generally reason these things out.
Yeah.
I would say that Om Shanti Om is probably actually a bit more confusing if you went in not knowing the movie and also not speaking Japanese.
Right. Like we did have a leg up in that we've seen the movie many times.
You've seen the movie before, and it does say, like, you know, this takes place 30 years ago, 30 years later when Om is reborn. Like, it's kind of, there's a little bit of stage dressing there, but I had to check afterwards, but I forgot that Shanti Priya was pregnant with Mukesh's kid, and they were secretly married, so there's kind of that sort of modesty stuff in there too. I don't think you would have gotten that. Like, no one was miming like, "Ooh, baby in my belly," or anything like that.
The only one that's doing that is the woman who mimes the reincarnation of Om.
Yeah. So like, there would be some things I think you would not catch. The one I'd heard about before this is combining two things that I'm interested in about Japan, but are also inaccessible to me. The Takarazuka Review, I'd watch more of them. And Legend of the Galactic Heroes, which is apparently one of the greatest animes and mangas of all time. It's like 150 episodes long. It's like a Wagnerian space opera epic that's apparently great, but hard to get a hold of here.
Yeah.
And it's also very long. But Takarazuka Review did it. So I would like to
see. They did like Ace Attorney.
Yeah. And Lupin the Third and quite a few other things. But yeah, Legend of the Galactic Heroes is something I've been interested in and can't get. And then Takarazuka, another thing that I find interesting and don't have easy access to. Why not do them both at once? I just get completely confused. Because how are they going to do all the space battles and stuff on stage?
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe I should show you one of the Sailor Moon ones. Because, you know, that has space battles, kind of.
Yeah. But that's the one other one I'd heard of, kind of, before looking into it more. Was that, oh, this anime that I've been curious about seeing for years. It's from the
80s.
Yeah. Something I'd wanted to see for a long time, based on very popular novels in Japan, which I don't think have been translated. So something I'd want to see is also available in this form, which is even more difficult to understand.
Yeah. So to kind of reach the point of all this, this Om Shanti Om musical kind of combines a number of our points of interest, which is why
stage musicals, anime, Om Shanti Om,
Bollywood,
film, Bollywood.
Yeah.
So it was quite the conflagration.
And I think, like, I am always interested in how stories ping pong around the world. I find it interesting that Seven Samurai is made in Japan and then remade as Magnificent Seven in the US and then remade as Sholay in India. I am always interested in kind of different adaptations, new remakes, different takes on the same story, especially when it's going across cultures, and what it kind of says about remaking or adapting that story, that narrative, those characters within a different context and to a new audience, and often to a different medium. And so, you know, while I do think that, like, I complain. I am tired of the level of kind of remakes and new adaptations that we're seeing in Hollywood and also a bit in Bollywood, because we're just getting kind of
South Indian remakes.
Yeah, which I don't always find the most interesting, or there's a lot of just kind of, we're going to put a new entry into this older film series, but it has nothing to do with the older
film. That wasn't even a series. It was just, here's the second one.
Yeah, so I am a bit tired.
That's Kasari, by the way.
Well, there's many of them. I am a bit tired of this kind of more cynical approach that seems based more on name brand recognition than a more artistic interest in wanting to adapt these stories. But, you mm-hmm. know, like, I'm always going to be interested in kind of a new take on Romeo and Juliet and things like that. So,
but think about the progression of this particular story.
Yes.
It starts off where Farrah Khan was hired to work with
Andrew Lloyd Webber. So and that I would brings also, it back to the Phantom of the Opera.
Brings back to Phantom of the Opera. But I would also like to see that play, Bombay Dreams.
Yeah.
Which I don't know how we do that legally. There does not appear to be a DVD or anything.
There might be a pro shot of it. I
looked into it a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah. I've seen clips from it.
Yeah.
And what's really interesting is, you know, like, the main clip I've seen of it is them doing Chaya Chaya. Which Farrah Khan choreographed, like, on top of a train, on stage. So it's interesting to see her taking her...
After Dilsey.
Yeah, after Dilsey.
Okay.
Obviously, because the song wouldn't exist.
Right.
So it's interesting to see her taking her work on screen to the stage.
Yeah.
However, she believed that the plot of Bombay Dreams...
Yeah, that...
...was flawed.
That, like, a slumdog, essentially, like, a kid... from little means, would becoming a hero in Bollywood is so unlikely that it would be more likely that he would be reincarnated as well, which is the story of Om Shanti Om.
Exactly. So while she was working with Andrew Lloyd Webber of Bombay Dreams, she got this idea. And I think, like, even wrote it down on, like, paper with Andrew Lloyd Webber, like a letterhead mm-hmm. or something, because she thought, like, this would never...
It's a pretty good idea, though.
This is a concept that works for Western audiences, but not as a concept that works for Indian audiences, for Bollywood audiences.
But then she makes the movie, which at one point was the most profitable film of all time in India.
In India, yeah.
Which, pretty good.
And we are big fans of Om Shanti Om. We've seen it many times.
Three or four times. And we also... we do a couple lectures for university students. And we ask them to watch that movie because, yes, I can hear the comments now. It's a little over the top. I know. But it's the most Bollywood film.
Yeah. And also because of the two time periods that the film is set in, it kind of teaches you how to watch Bollywood movies. And it really lays bare a lot of the conventions and tropes within Bollywood movies. So I actually find it a really good introduction.
Yeah.
And because it has these two acts, it's about entertainers. Like, it just, it makes...
It is very theatrical.
It's very theatrical, and it made perfect sense to me to adapt to a stage musical.
So then in 2017, the all-female...
10 years later,
the all-female review of Takarazuka puts it on.
Yeah.
And I'm going to make the most pretentious thing I've ever said, I think. Do you remember Mr. Burns, a post-electric play by Anne Washburn?
I do, yes.
So I believe we've talked about this on the show once before. It doesn't come up often.
Why would it?
But that's a play.
Yeah.
A Western play.
Yeah.
A New York play, I think.
Yeah.
About the post-apocalypse and people are trying to remember what happened in the Simpsons episode Cape Fear.
Yes.
And we saw it at the TransAlta Arts Barns here in Edmonton before the pandemic, mm-hmm. probably 2018, mm-hmm. I think. And the thing about that play is at first it starts off with people just sitting around a campfire, or at least this staging if it did. People sitting around a campfire trying to remember this story. And the playwright said that, you know, The Simpsons is kind of the last cultural touchstone that your average person is going to remember, mm-hmm. you know, parts of. And then...
Collectively, yeah.
Collectively.
Last collective cultural touchstone.
And that first part is, like, right as the apocalypse is happening. You don't actually know what the problem is, but you hear there's, like, nuclear plants going off and stuff like that. Then I think it's 10 or 15 years in the future, there are now traveling troops who reenact their favorite Simpsons episodes, and each one has their own. Mm-hmm. And then I think it's, like, 70 years after that, the play has become, like, this Jacobean revenge opera thing. And it's, you know... If you looked at that, you might not even understand that it's connected to Cape Fear. I mean, Itchy and Scratch here, there.
Mr. Burns.
Yeah, Mr. Burns notably not in that episode.
Yeah.
But at some point, someone trips up in the early part, and then that error becomes kind of registered in the future. And this is a happier version of that. Like, you know, a play was being worked on about Indian stuff. Mm. An Indian person thinks, I don't know if that's really going to work. It's too English. I'll put my own Indian spin on it. That does really, really well. Then the popularity of Bollywood films in Japan leads to a theatrical troupe, a very Japanese-centric theatrical troupe, putting their own spin on it.
Yeah, so,
who knows if this is going to influence someone else down the line, and then there's some other new version of this.
Yeah, yeah, and that's what I'm saying about kind of how... You know, these stories, you know, and it's starting with Andrew Lloyd Webber maybe not understanding how Bollywood works.
Yeah. It also reminds me of that, I think it's A24 that's out this year, Grand Theft Hamlet. I do want to watch that.
Oh, yeah.
Which is an attempt to...
I don't think it's A24. I think that's on Mubi. So.
Or maybe it's Neon. Maybe. But it's an attempt to try and do Hamlet in the world of Grand Theft Auto 5.
Yeah.
Which is very chaotic and violent. And... You know, the medium of being in a video game where all sorts of crazy crap can happen and people appreciating it, but maybe not quite getting it. I do want to see that movie, but also I could see this story being retold that way down the line.
We also want to stress that this is like a licensed adaptation of Om Shanti. It has Red Chili's trademark on it. Yeah. Okay. Do you want to set up the musical for us? It'll be interesting to talk about something that, like, again, we didn't even have subtitles for.
Yeah. So, Om Shanti Om, Endless Cycle of Love, debuted in 2017.
Great subtitle. Also, very Japanese subtitle.
Yeah, and pretty applicable to the story.
Yeah.
Debuted in 2017, was directed by Koyanagi Naoko. You've got them done Japanese style here with the last name first. It's good.
Yes, that's how it was on the English language Takarazuka Wiki.
Yeah. So it stars Kurenai Yuzuru as Om, Kisaki Aidi as Shanti, Rei Makoto as Mukesh.
And Rei Makoto is also in the RRR musical, playing Boom, I believe.
Mm. And Miki Chikuza as Om's mother, and Farah Khan visited Japan to attend the musical, which... That must have been interesting for her.
It seems like she had a great time. She was taking pictures of all the costumes, taking pictures with the cast.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not sure of the popularity of Om Shanti Om itself in Japan, but Bollywood is, and Indian cinema is popular in Japan. Bahubali and RRR are very popular.
The Rajamouli films, like...
Yeah.
We could mention another thing we did in Japan. We went to this bar called The Whales of August.
I'm sure we've mentioned this before.
And their whole gimmick is you could tell them the name of a movie and they will make a drink based on it. And I said Triple R. And they gave me a drink that was sort of layered in the colors of the poster and two coins.
That
was fun.
It was very fun.
But, like, those guys are super cinephiles.
Yeah.
But the fact that it would even... It gets that special attention, and also they even know what it is, means that, you know, at least the Rajamouli films are kind of hitting really big there.
And I know Three Idiots was also big in Japan, which is why there was a joke made about Three Idiots in...
Yeah, there's an Amir Khan cameo.
Yeah.
So the play is two acts, much like the film. And it's about a guy named Om who, this will probably be a mixture of the film and the play in my head, because again, I didn't know what they were saying, but I got the gist of it. He's a junior artiste.
Yeah.
He falls in love with Shanti Priya because of her ad, the Dreamy Girl ad, and he kind of worms his way into the production. They fall in love with each other, but she's already...
Does she fall in love with him?
Sure.
Yeah.
It's unclear. But she's promised to Mukesh already. She's pregnant, actually. And Mukesh burns down the set with her in it, and Ohm also dies as a result of this. Ohm
is reincarnated.
I think he's Ohm Prakash is his first name, and then Ohm Kapoor is who he's reincarnated as.
Yeah.
So then 30 years later, he's a kind of douchey mid-2000s Bollywood actor who starts kind of remembering what happened to his prior incarnation. He meets his old mother. Mm-hmm. I guess that's the way you could say it.
And Mukesh. And Mukesh. Who's still a film producer.
Yeah, and his best buddy from back in the day, and another actor and a director who I don't actually remember being in the movie that much. Mm. But he kind of gets the old band back together and finds a new girl who looks exactly like Shanti, but quite importantly, is not aware of her reincarnation.
Well, I...
But there is a Shanti ghost.
She's not necessarily reincarnated the way he is. Yeah.
But there is a ghost of Shanti that is haunting kind of Ohm.
Yes.
And for that matter, Mukesh. Like, so that is kind of... The resolution is depending on the ghost and the modern day Shanti.
Yeah, he is that, like,
Ohm... He does a big theatrical performance to show off his new movie, Ohm Shanti Ohm. And it's actually a way to entrap Mukesh, who did murder them, and get him to admit his guilt.
Yeah, it's a revenge. The stage musical is very similar to the film. It is shorter. It's like an hour shorter.
Well, they didn't have my favorite part, which is mind it.
No, they didn't. So it's streamlined. It's hard for us to tell how many of the kind of inside jokes from the original film they kept in the musical.
They didn't have the guy guarding his face at the premiere.
That they kept in the musical adaptation because, again, we couldn't understand it. But it's very clear. They do have that little bit where they kind of have the lines from Main PR Kia. Hmm. And you have the screenwriter kind of overhearing it. They do the Filmfare Awards, and they call them the Filmfare Awards.
That was hilarious. I was wondering if they were going to do it. And I was like, if they do the Doom 4 joke, I'm out of here. That's too much. And they don't quite do that, but they do have Abhishek Bachchan, Akshay Kumar, and Aamir Khan, who again was supposed to be in Om Shanti, but didn't do it.
Yeah. And they have him parodying his Three Idiots role, which makes sense because that film was popular in Japan.
Yeah. And Bachchan, I think, is supposed to be from Doom.
Yeah.
And Akshay Kumar comes out and he's shooting a bunch of guns, so it's probably like Kaladi or
it's
any number of Akshay Kumar movies where he's a gun guy.
I think we were impressed on how they kind of kept some of those jokes in.
Yeah.
And also that we could tell that they kept those jokes in even though we couldn't, you know, understand what
it was
going on.
It helped that at that part they were putting the names up on screen in English.
Or
in Roman characters.
Yes. Yes. And it did say Filmfare Awards. And, you know, again, they do...
And he did get a big Filmfare Award, which is bigger than the normal one, but it is that kind of, you know, swirly green thing.
Yeah. And they are poking fun in, I think, a really loving way throughout the stage musical at Bollywood and at kind of the spectacle. And that was really fun.
I mean, I think they could have done more with, like...
They do the whole King of... There's a whole new number, the King of Bollywood.
Yeah. They could have done more with, like, film stuff. Like, they did some rear projection occasionally.
Yeah.
But just so much of Om Shanti Om was the kind of texture of old movies.
Mm.
And I get that it's a bit difficult to pull that off in... screen on stage, but they did have the big screen back there. Like, they could have shown more stuff. Like, for example, the premiere where they're Ohm is trying to sneak in
with Doom Tana.
Yeah, they just kind of like put the screen down, and then there's an announcer there announcing everybody, and then they come up and talk. But they're just in front of this screen. Like, I think you could have done more with, like, you know, floodlights and making it look like a movie premiere instead of just doing the screen.
Yeah.
But budget limitations are obviously going to be more of a problem with a stage adaptation and reliability of being able to do things over and over again.
Yeah, and we are also kind of maybe, you know, we're unfamiliar with the conventions of Takarazuka.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, there are certain kind of staging that we're used to seeing in, like, traveling Broadway shows that, you know, maybe that's not a part of kind of the Takarazuka model.
Yeah.
But I did like what they did with the projections in the back, especially with kind of the billboards with Shanti, which then in the second half you have Om, and the way that that kind of Shanti 2.0, the way that Sandy is introduced, is she is looking at the billboard of Om the way that he was looking at the billboard of Shanti. That's a totally new convention for this adaptation, and one that I actually quite like, as opposed to her just like walking in some sort of casting.
Yeah.
I thought that was a good change. Like, I actually thought, was actually sitting there thinking like, this is new, and this makes, like, it calls it back to the first act in, I think, a much more satisfying way, and kind of makes it
in a way that
a stronger,
works really well on stage.
Yeah, in a way that works really well on stage, and I think makes a stronger connection between the Om and Shanti characters in the second part of the story.
Yeah.
So I really liked that. The songs from the musical are here. So they translate or adapt.
From the movie.
Yeah, from the movie.
Yeah.
They translate.
They do some of them.
I would say most of them. You know, we have Diwangi Diwangi.
Which, that was what I was wondering about. Well, I was wondering about Diwangi Diwangi because in the movie, that's so much of like, here's a list of all the old important stars and kind of the current important stars.
Yeah, here
and they don't really do it that way because it wouldn't make any sense, and there's kind of like a limited cast, right?
It wouldn't make sense, but I do like the way they do it because that's the moment when that's the moment when he meets Sandy, when he meets Shanti 2.0.
Yeah.
Where, like, he reconnects.
It's more like a party song.
Yeah, he reconnects with his mother, and it's all the people from kind of like in the environment of his old life in the slums, coming together and partying with him. So they do interpret that song differently, but I think they do it in a way that, you know, makes sense for this stage adaptation. Although, I mean, it would be like funny, although we wouldn't get the joke, to bring out like other famous Takarizians.
But in the DVD though, it did, like, a thing popped up when it said, when a new actress came in.
Yeah.
So I think there would be logistical difficulties with that. If they were doing like a special event.
Yes.
But like, I don't think you could do that night after night because then these retired Takarizians.
And you have to pay them.
Would just be in the show.
Exactly. Exactly. So, but I liked that kind of change to that song. I thought it really worked. Dardi Disco doesn't have the same kind of like shirtless appeal.
Yeah, because they can't really do Dardi Disco with a
remember when I told you it had to be wholesome?
With an actress
playing a man,
like, the level of nudity, think, would be an issue.
Well, it's not
as
quite
well
nudity,
as water
but, yeah.
and oil.
Yeah.
Like, the whole point of that song is to show kind of, like, I don't know about crassness, but just like the amped up sexuality of the 2000s versus the 70s. And also that Om is kind of an interesting guy and that he'll be like the item girl.
Yeah. They do a good kind of...
They use that song, though. It's fun, but it's just not going to be the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, they use all the songs. I do like how to explain Om's kind of in the present day storyline, his superficialness. He kind of has like all these, like, these three hanger-ons who are all dressed
like massaging him and
like in really kind of gaudy out there outlandish outfits. I think that really works
basically
very,
his Harajuku girls,
very easily, like, telegraph. Doom Tana is like, again, there's a lot of these things where it's like, well, how are they going to do this, because you can't do as quick of like costume changes and you can't do the same kind of special effects. But Doom Tana is,
you're not going to have these heroes from the past interacting with Deepika Padukone.
Yeah, but Doom Tana is really fun because they kind of have this like trio of the actor who Shanti's
supposed to be in the movie.
To be in the movie, and Om coming up and like interrupting them, and it's a great bit of comedy.
It is comedy that Sherrick would also do.
Yeah,
it's definitely the kind of mugging that he kind of does sometimes.
Yeah.
For comedic effect.
They open with the song from Cars, just like in the film. We have that. They do a really good job of the kind of refrain, the song that you hear at the end of the film.
Yeah.
And And the one, I always kind of consider it as like the dream ballet part of Om Shanti Om, where Om and Shanti go for dinner and they have the snow globe and then they dance. I thought they did a beautiful rendition of that where like more actors kind of join them on stage and all.
Yeah, they're doing waltzes.
All dance. Like it was.
I like the fake car too. That was fun.
Yeah, and that did also kind of some stuff with the projection in the back. Like I was really impressed with taking these elements from the film and adapting them to the stage. I also think they do a really good job adapting the whole kind of Mother India inspired scene where the fire breaks out on set, because again, yeah, you can't have real fire.
Well, you can also see the cameraman in the corner filming it,
yeah,
and then Kuro Nayuza are running up and doing, you know, yeah, mugging in front of the camera like Shah Rukh Khan does in, mm-hmm, the film.
Yeah.
But since they are kind of on the side, you know, I thought they, you know, this might also be like the kinds of things that they, that are expected of the Takarazuka review. But I think you could do stuff with lighting and the curtains to indicate like aperture changes of film. Like you,
okay,
could do like,
sure,
35 millimeter versus widescreen by opening and closing the curtains and, mm-hmm, like showing the old movies that way. I think there was some stuff that you could have done there. And, you know, I wasn't expecting it, but that's the sort of thing I was thinking. If I had to stage this, that's, mm-hmm, what I would do.
There's also a bunch of new songs.
Yeah.
Because it is a musical. So while they use...
Almost a sung through musical.
Yeah. While they use the majority of the songs from the film, they also have to add a number of them. So there's a song...
There's about five or six new ones.
For the mother. I think like the new standout song for me is the one for Mukesh.
Yeah. He has like a Disney villain song.
Yeah. Yeah. So like typically
and
villains...
a bunch of guys in suits are showing up and... Yeah.
Yeah. Typically villains in Bollywood movies don't get songs. And so I really liked the addition of this villain song. It, yeah, really, like, it has a great menacing flair to it.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of the performers?
I thought Kurana Yuzuru, so...
I think she really makes that character her own. It did not feel like she was trying to portray Shah Rukh Khan. It
She did have some visual tics of his, I think kind of his blubbering sometimes,
yeah,
that he does. But physicality-wise, she's more of a Bachchan. Like, she's kind of long and lean.
Yeah.
And, yeah, she's pretty good at the 70s looks and then also kind of strutting around as like, oh, I'm famous now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I think she references him sometimes, but she's not just imitating.
No, I really felt like she made that role her own. Like, mm-hmm, I really... From the get-go, I was like, oh, this is her own. Mm-hmm. And I think... The success of the show really rests on her shoulders.
She's on stage for almost the entire thing.
Yeah, she's on stage.
There's maybe
a
three
lot.
Or four scenes that she's not present for total.
And yeah, she has a ton of energy. It's a very broad performance, but I think also the material lends itself to being broad.
Also,
sure,
she has to sing the,
yeah,
entire time.
And dance. I mean, the dancing was fine. I think we are used to some very elaborate dance numbers because of Bollywood.
Yeah.
Obviously...
These are closer to Broadway.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. On stage, you know, like, there's no cuts or anything. So.
They were zooming in, though. They had multiple cameras,
yeah,
and they would go
but
from kind of a
like
widescreen to...
performers keeping up their stamina.
Well, exactly, yeah,
yeah,
yeah, yeah. There's, yeah, no cuts for the performers, but the film itself,
yeah,
did have editing in it.
And some of the choreography, I'm fairly certain, kind of references the choreography of the original film.
I mean, if Farrah Khan was involved, I'm sure she probably...
Well, she attended, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, when you're making a adaptation of a movie by a famous choreographer,
mm-hmm,
I'm sure there's plenty to draw from. They didn't have the badminton part.
No,
I like
in
that,
Doomtana, no.
But a lot of those, again, you would need a costume change every 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Which wouldn't make sense.
Yeah. I really enjoyed this. I thought it was really fun.
I did think that Shanti was a little lacking,
mm-hmm,
but that also might just be because of her character. Because she's not
maybe
around for a lot,
yeah,
of it. And then also in the second half, again, it's a little unclear because we're not speaking Japanese. Like, okay, which Shanti is that?
Yeah.
Om's
mother was very good, though. I really liked her performance.
Yeah, Mukesh was good.
Yeah.
Was the sort of wacky director and other actor guy were good.
And you have an ensemble that kind of shows up as kind of different background characters throughout.
I mean, I feel like in my head I'm referring to them as male because it was...
Well, the characters versus the performers.
Sure, but like I think that, you know, they're such an established troupe that do this so much, they're very good at acting like men.
Yes.
It was like... It didn't feel like play acting, women pretending to be men. Like,
no.
These are professionals whose job it is to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And so much so that you would either specialize in being a man or a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And they did a fantastic job of being very masculine.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, I didn't know how that was going to go, but I was very impressed.
Mm-hmm.
As a very masculine person myself, I like to...
It's okay.
I like to see it in other people.
What? Being very masculine while also wearing heels and glitter and a lot of makeup.
I was wondering why everyone needed heels. Then I was thinking, oh, should the men be taller than the women?
Men performing, like, yeah.
Like, is it just sort of part of the accoutrements of this troupe to always have everyone in heels? The big 70s, like, flare pants kind of covered it a lot of the time.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I thought that was interesting. I didn't really know why they were doing that.
Well, I think the heels thing is just a performing thing.
That's just how you're trained to dance?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's just a part of kind of... And also, like, to create that stature. Not necessarily, I'm saying, like, taller than the women, but, like, the kind of physicality and stature of performing. I don't know. I'm not a performer. I've never done drama or theater in my life.
It just seems harder to do in heels.
Sure. Sure. But I had a lot of fun with this. Like, I will say this is, like, probably of niche interest to people. You have to kind of be...
I don't know how many more of these, like, I would want to see.
Well, you want to see RRR.
I want to see RRR. And you said that there's kind of, like, fan subs available. So I'd be kind of more interested if I was to find, like, the Rose of Versailles of instance with English fan subs to actually know what's going on. Like, this helped because it's a story I'm fairly familiar with.
Or if we were there to see one in person, I think.
Yeah,
we'd
if we
really
were there in person,
that.
I'll just go see anything. Like, I don't need to understand what's happening.
Yeah, because that's definitely a different level of enjoyment and engagement.
Well, it's like going to the opera. Like,
yeah.
I don't speak. I know a little Italian, but I don't know sung through Italian that well, but you get the gist of what they're saying.
Yeah, yeah. So I agree. And I mean, I understand why when they're making these DVDs, they don't put English subtitles on them because...
It's a pretty specialized audience
that
wants this.
They're only available in the Japanese market. But, you know, I would love to see... more of these with subtitles. And I really enjoyed this one because it was at this cross section of, you know, of my interests. And it was really interesting to see how do you take a Bollywood musical and adapt it to stage with an all-female cast. Like,
yeah, I guess with the exception of Legend of Galactic Heroes, I would be most interested in seeing things that I am familiar with, like Lupin the Third, or Phoenix Wright, Ace Attorney.
Oh, man, there's so many classic novels they've done. Let me tell you, there are so many things you're familiar with that they've done.
Yeah, like, that might just be me being kind of a Philistine and not particularly knowledgeable about Japanese theater and Japanese traditions. But it's easier when I know, like, okay, that's Lupin, he steals stuff, that's Zenigata, he chases him.
Yeah.
Like, having that baseline helped me appreciate the story of Aung San Suu Kyi again.
Yeah, and I know they've done, like, The Legend of Genji... Mm-hmm. The one that the Tale of the Princess Kaguya is based on.
The Tale of Genji, it's supposedly one of the first novels of all time.
Yeah.
Written by Murasaki something, I forget. But
they've done The Count of Monte Cristo, Wuthering Heights, The Great Gatsby, Pride and Prejudice, East of Eden, War and Peace, The Portrait of Dorian Gray,
Guys and Dolls would be good.
Yeah. Bonnie and Clyde, Casablanca.
Yeah.
Sabrina, Ocean's 11.
Wow.
So they've done a number of stories.
Which one? Is it the Soderbergh one or the original one?
I don't know.
That's even more film nerdy to find out.
I don't know.
Because then it's an adaptation of an adaptation of an adaptation.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm going to assume...
Soderbergh?
It's the Soderbergh one.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think the titular 11 had more character... In the Soderbergh one, because in the original, it's just like, okay, well, there's Frank, there's Dino. They got their bits that they do.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd be interested in watching more of these, but But it's a film I haven't seen four times. I would probably need the subtitles to be able to catch up.
Yeah. Are you interested in watching a Sailor Moon musical now?
I've seen some clips from it online. People doing that TikTok joke.
Sailor Moon.
You know the joke?
No.
I hope they play Hot to Go. This is pretty Guardian Sailor Moon, the stage musical.
Oh, okay. Like, that joke, yeah.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
And then they play Moonlight Destiny.
Yeah, so I've seen, like, that bit. I don't know, maybe, again, that's a... I watched it when I was, like, 10, because it was on around the same time as Dragon
Ball. Because I can get you Sailor Moon subtitles.
I know you can do that. I would just say that my familiarity with that material isn't quite as... extensive as yours.
And I should also say the pro shot that I watched of Spirited Away, it is available
that was on Apple,
to rent. It was distributed in North America through G Kids, and it also has subtitles.
Yeah, and I guess probably the thing that most people would have seen that's similar to this is the Hamilton that was done Apple TV. No, for Disney Plus when it came out. Like, that was actually a big selling feature of Disney Plus when it first came out. So you could see Hamilton. And we did. And, there's things that are different between stage adaptations and films. And you just have to keep that in mind going in. And then we saw Hamilton on stage in town, too. So
yeah, but, I mean, a filmed version is it's the next best thing to going in person. It just, it is what it is. And it does help preserve, some of these shows and the cast.
Well, and Broadway is a very expensive thing to feature. I don't know how much Tuckers are
going to is traveling to Japan.
Yeah, traveling to Japan is expensive, but I don't think Takarazuka was that expensive when we were looking into it.
I think it ranges from $125 to $35.
Yeah, like...
Canadian.
Yeah, it seemed pretty, like, reasonable to go, but again, you're not getting subtitles and... Yeah. Probably not even any signs in English. Like, I would assume that that'd be, like, super Japanese everywhere.
So I think, like, 3,500 to 12,000?
Yeah.
Yen?
Yeah. Yeah. But it seemed like, compared to Broadway, which I just read two books about and I found out why it's so expensive, but it's, like, out of the reach of your average person to go see.
Yeah.
Or you have to save up for a whole year to see it. This seems like, actually, that your average person could go see it pretty easily.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
Well, if you've gotten this far in the episode, thank you for indulging us.
Mm-hmm. This is possibly our most indulgent episode after the awards episode and one or two others. This is a new rabbit hole.
But again, it's something that we were interested in. And, you know, if you're a Bollywood fan, maybe you're also interested in finding this out as well.
If you're a Bollywood fan, you have an interest in the theatrical.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I think outside of Japan, this disc is really expensive. So if you are interested...
go to Japan.
Find
a way. Broadway. It's a gigantic place. It won't take you too long to find. Just ask someone.
Yeah. So that brings us to the end of this episode. What are we doing next time, Matt?
I don't know. What are we doing next time?
It's going to be another, I guess, supplemental. It's going to be a Netflix and Dill. We are going to be doing another pilot season. Mm. So we'll be picking a number of streaming shows and watching the first episode. And then we will discuss what we thought and pick one that we will do a full episode on, that we will watch the rest of the season and do a full episode on.
It's not a long show.
If any of our listeners have any suggestions for streaming shows that we haven't checked out yet, new ones.
Yeah. Don't suggest Patalok. We're going to watch that second season.
Yeah.
Made in Heaven. Maybe. We heard it wasn't very good. But, like, new stuff, not new seasons.
Yes, yes. So if there's any show that you think we should check out, let us know.
Hopefully not about a serial killer in a small town.
Yeah.
Because last time we did this, there was quite a few about that.
Yeah.
And it was pretty depressing.
But, you know, there's, at this point, kind of more interesting stuff coming out in the streaming series space than in the theatrical space.
Yeah, what is even happening?
I don't really know what our mid-year review is going to look like yet, because there's just been nothing all year. But let us know if there's any movies that have come out that we should check out too. But for right now,
we do try and keep an eye on it, and yeah, it's pretty bad.
Yeah, for right now,
we talk about Baby John, I guess, again.
We're going to be looking at some streaming series, so that'll be out in a couple of weeks. In the meantime, Matt, how can people keep up with the show?
Email us.
Yeah.
Bollywood is for lovers.
@gmail.com.
That's the only way to reach us now.
Yeah.
Look us up on Letterboxd. I'm at Matt, P-O-W-E-S.
I'm at Erin E. Fraser, E-R-N-E-F-R-S-E-R. Yeah. We want to give a thank you to Becca Dahlke for our artwork.
And thank you to the people of Japan for letting us visit their beautiful country.
Yes. Yes. If you're a fan of the show, please consider leaving us a rating and a review and a star rating on your podcatcher of choice. If you'd like to collect some biffle points for that, email us. You can also check out my other show that I do with Paul Matwichak called Trash Art and the Movies. We just did an episode on movies about strippers. So that should be interesting. And that's it. Thank you for listening. That's it.
Are dogs allowed at the Tucker is a good review?
I don't think so, unfortunately.
Sorry, Tuffy.
Yeah.
This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.